Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Brian Lynn reports on the effects of a warming atmosphere. Mario Ritter Jr. has a story about starting plants from seeds. Later, we present the next part in our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first,
a new study predicts continued warming will lead to more intense and deadlier storms hitting parts of the United States. Scientists say higher temperatures are expected to cause an increase in so-called supercell storms. Weather scientists say supercells can bring high winds, heavy rain, hail, and tornadoes. The new study was recently published in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. It predicted a nationwide increase of 6.6% in the number of supercells by 2100. The study said there could be a 25.8% increase in areas affected by supercells, as well as in the amount of time the storms last. The study's writers say some areas of the U.S. South can expect more intense storms. Rolling Fork, Mississippi, was hit by a powerful and deadly tornado recently. Storms that hit areas of Mississippi and Alabama since March 24th killed at least 21 people. The new study projected that the American South would get at least one supercell per year by the year 2100. Here are some examples of past supercell events. A 2013 tornado killed 51 people in Moore, Oklahoma. In 2011, a tornado in Joplin, Missouri, killed 161 people. And in the same year, tornadoes killed more than 320 people in Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, and other parts of the South. The study used computer simulations. A computer used a model to predict what will happen 73 years from now with different levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Walker Ashley is a professor of disaster geography at Northern Illinois University. He told the Associated Press that people are already living with more serious storms. The data that I've seen has persuaded me that we are in this experiment and living it right now, Ashley said. What we're seeing in the longer term is actually occurring right now. Ashley and others said that while the Mississippi tornado fits the projections, it was just a single weather event. This is different from making climate predictions over many years covering large areas. Past studies have not been able to predict supercells and tornadoes in future climate simulations because they are small weather events. The study identified large changes in where and when the storms hit. The researchers said more intense storms are to be expected in the eastern United States. If warming is more moderate, the study predicts parts of eastern Mississippi and eastern Oklahoma will get 3 more supercells every 2 years. In addition, eastern Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, western Tennessee, and eastern Georgia can expect to get 1 more supercell every other year. If warming is serious, the study projects similar changes, but with worsening supercells over eastern Oklahoma, Arkansas, and southern Missouri. Ashley said cities that should see more supercells as warming worsens include Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Memphis, and Nashville, Tennessee, Tupelo and Jackson, Mississippi, and Birmingham, Alabama. I'm Brian Lynn.
As spring progresses in the northern half of the world, stores are offering gardeners many choices for seeds. Starting a garden from seeds, rather than buying young plants, is a low-cost way to enjoy many kinds of flowers and food crops. Looking through catalogs that offer mail-order seeds is one way to get them. Choosing seeds from racks at local nurseries or garden centers is another way. Jessica Damiano writes about gardening for the Associated Press. Here is what she says about starting plants from seeds. In April, there is enough daylight to start garden seeds without the aid of electric lights. Some seeds can be planted directly in the garden. Others will have to be started in containers, inside the home, or under a shelter. Many people have the opinion that you are not a real gardener unless you start at least one thing you grow from seed. You can always buy young plants already growing at the store. But seeds give you the right to say you know how to grow a plant from the beginning. The cost is also far lower. In fact, starting seeds is easy. Everything the plant needs to germinate or start growing is in the seed. All you have to do is put it into soil that is a little wet and not let the soil dry out while the seed does its thing. If there are any special requirements, they are usually printed in the simple directions on the back of every seed container, or packet. The one thing you might not find in those instructions is the suggestion to put mycorrhizal fungi around larger seeds, or to put a little on smaller seeds. You should be able to find these special fungi where you buy seeds. Fungi are a form of life that is neither plant nor animal. Mushrooms are among their common forms. Mycorrhizal fungi are special. They form a symbiotic relationship with some plants and help provide water and nutrients to them. Many nurseries now carry two kinds. They are called endomycorrhizal and ectomycorrhizal fungi. Annual plants, ones that grow for one season, and many garden crops associate with endomycorrhizal fungi. Some plants do not need them at all. This includes members of the kohl family, cabbages, kohlrabi, and kale. Broccoli and cauliflower also do not use fungi, so you do not need to add it. Besides fungi, Damiano warns against soaking your seeds in hydrogen peroxide, as some experts often suggest. There are bacteria living on all seeds that are supposed to be there. Peroxide will kill them. The bacteria have developed to help in germination and growth. They also put microorganisms into the soil that work in partnership with many plants. Planting big seeds is easy, and it is a good idea to get the assistance of young people to help in the job. Very small seeds, like celery seeds, need a little equipment. Put the tip of a pencil in water and then use it to pick up each seed. It will hold one seed as you put it into its starting container. When choosing containers to start plants, Damiano advises against buying new plastic ones. She suggests using any old plastic containers or using newspaper or cardboard. You can use egg containers or anything that is available. But remember to put drainage holes in each one. If you do not add holes, water can build up in the bottom and cause the seeds to rot. Damiano reminds growers that it would be a shame to grow something in a container and then forget what it is called. Write the names of all your seeds on the containers you are growing them in. And it is never too early to think about the next growing season. Once you have established plants in your garden, consider letting some go to seed. This means you are growing them for their seeds, not for crops. That way, you will have your own seeds for next year's garden, and you will not have to buy them at all. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Thanks for being on today's show, Mario. Is gardening something you do in real life?
Hi, Dan. Thank you for having me on the program. We do have a garden in real life, but I'm no expert. It's fun to provide information from experts on gardening and to try out some of their suggestions.
So, the article talks about a symbiotic relationship between the fungi and plants. Is symbiotic used to describe anything other than a plant-fungus relationship?
Good question, Dan. Biologists use the term symbiotic to describe relationships between living things in which two species interact and benefit each other. In this case, The fungi make it easier for certain kinds of plants to get water and nutrients. Many symbiotic relationships exist in nature, such as between birds and mammals, and among fish. But writers often use the term to describe any relationship between two groups or people which provides benefits for both sides.
I also thought going to seed was an interesting expression. What does that mean?
Going to seed is actually an expression of disapproval, meaning going bad or getting worse, and is often used to describe people. In a garden, if you let plants go to seed, they look bad and might grow out of control. But plants like fennel and many others are grown just for their seeds, so the expression has a little different meaning in the garden.
Thanks, Mario. I think I should try gardening more myself.
Raising plants, even if it's just a few, can have a surprisingly good effect, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Vice President Calvin Coolidge became president in 1923, following the death of President Warren Harding. Coolidge quickly gained the trust of most Americans by investigating the crimes of Harding's top officials. The conservative economic policies of the new president also won wide support. Coolidge had 1 year to prove his abilities to the American people before the election of 1924. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell us about that election.
Coolidge was a quiet man who believed in limited government policies, but his silence hid a fighting political spirit. Coolidge had worked for many years to gain the White House. He would not give it up without a struggle. Coolidge moved quickly after becoming president to gain control of the Republican Party. He named his own advisors to important jobs, and he replaced a number of officials with people whose loyalty he could trust. Most Republicans liked Coolidge. They felt his popular policies would make him a strong candidate in the presidential election. For this reason, Coolidge faced only one serious opponent for the Republican presidential nomination in 1924. Coolidge's opponent was the great automobile manufacturer Henry Ford of Michigan. Ford had been a Democratic candidate for the Senate in 1918. He lost that election. But after the election, some people in his company began to call for Ford to be the Republican presidential nominee in 1924.
Ford was one of history's greatest inventors and manufacturers, but he had limited skills in politics. Ford was poorly educated. He had extreme opinions about a number of groups. He hated labor unions, the stock market, dancing, smoking, and drinking alcohol. But most of all, Ford hated Jews. He produced a number of publications accusing the Jewish people of organizing international plots. At first, Ford appeared to be a strong opponent to Coolidge. But soon he realized that Coolidge was too strong politically. His economic policies were popular among the people, and the nation was at peace. the party could not deny Coolidge's nomination. Ford himself put an end to his chances by telling the nation that it was perfectly safe with Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge won the presidential nomination easily at the 1924 Republican Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. The Republican delegates chose Charles Dawes of Illinois to run with him as the vice presidential candidate.
The Democratic Party was much more divided. Many of the groups that traditionally supported Democratic candidates now were fighting against each other. For example, many farmers did not agree on policies with people living in cities. The educated did not agree with uneducated people. And many Protestant workers felt divided from Roman Catholic and Jewish workers. These differences made it hard for the Democratic Party to choose a national candidate. There was little spirit of compromise. Two main candidates campaigned for the Democratic nomination. The first was former Treasury Secretary William McAdoo. McAdoo had the support of many Democrats because of his strong administration of the railroads during the World War. Democratic voters in southern and western states liked him because of his conservative racial policies and his opposition to alcohol. The second main candidate was Alfred Smith, the governor of New York. Smith was a Roman Catholic. He was very popular with people in the eastern cities, Roman Catholics, and supporters of legal alcohol. But many rural delegates to the convention did not trust him.
The Democratic Party convention met in New York City. It quickly became a battle between the more liberal delegates from the cities and the more conservative delegates from rural areas. It was July. The heat was intense. Speaker after speaker appealed to the delegates for votes. One day passed, then another. For 9 days, the nation listened on the radio as the delegates argued about the nomination. The delegates voted 95 times without success. Finally, McAdoo and Smith agreed to withdraw from the race. Even then, the delegates had to vote 8 more times before they finally agreed on compromise candidates. The Democratic delegates finally chose John Davis to be their presidential nominee. Davis was a lawyer for a major bank. He had served briefly under President Wilson as ambassador to Britain. The delegates also chose Charles Bryan to be the vice presidential candidate. Bryan was the younger brother of the famous Democrat and populist leader William Jennings Bryan.
There also was a third party in the 1924 election. Many of the old progressive supporters of Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson opposed the choices of the Republicans and Democrats. They thought the country needed another candidate to keep alive the spirit of reform. Progressive candidates had done well in the congressional election of 1922. But following the election, communists had gained influence in one of the major progressive parties. Most progressives did not want to join with communists. So they formed a new progressive party. The new party named Senator Robert La Follette of Wisconsin to be its presidential candidate. La Follette campaigned for increased taxes on the rich and public ownership of water power. He called for an end to child labor and limits on the power of the courts to interfere in labor disputes. And La Follette warned the nation about the dangers of single, large companies gaining control of important industries.
Coolidge won the 1924 election easily. He won the electoral votes of 35 states to just 12 for Davis of the Democrats. La Follette won only Wisconsin, his home state. Coolidge also won more popular votes than the other two candidates together. The American people voted for Coolidge partly to thank him for bringing back honesty and trust to the White House following the crimes of the Harding administration. But the main reason was that they liked his conservative economic policies and his support of business.
La Follette's Progressive Party died following the 1924 election. Most of his supporters later joined the Democrats, but the reform spirit of their movement remained alive through the next 4 years. They were difficult years for progressives. Conservatives in Congress passed laws reducing taxes for corporations and richer Americans.
Progressives fought for reforms in national agriculture policies. Most farmers did not share in the general economic growth of the 1920s. Instead, their costs increased while the price of their products fell. Many farmers lost their farms. Farmers and progressives wanted the federal government to create a system to control prices and the total supply of food produced. They said the government should buy and keep any extra food that farmers produced, and they called for officials to help them export food. Coolidge and most Republicans rejected these ideas. They said it was not the business of a free government to fix farm prices. And they feared the high costs of creating a major new government department and developing export markets. Coolidge vetoed three major farm reform bills following his election.
The debate over farm policy was in many ways like the debate over taxes or public controls on power companies. There was a basic difference of opinion about the proper actions of government. More conservative Americans believed the purpose of government was to support private business, not to control it. But more liberal Americans believed that government needed to do more to make sure that citizens of all kinds could share the nation's wealth more equally. Coolidge and the Republicans were in control in the 1920s. For this reason, the nation generally stayed on a conservative path. The Democrats and progressives would have to wait until later to put many of their more liberal ideas into action.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.